Welcome to Your Window on the World, and today in advance we're going to talk about how to make a modern resume, so be sure and stay tuned. Thanks for joining us today in advance, and we have some very good panelists with us today, and we have with us on my left-hand side, who is that?
Hello, Doris. It's Gordon here. Hello, everyone. I hope you're all feeling well today.
Now, Gordon, you're from England, and do you think that when people apply for a job in England, it's the same as in other countries, or is it different in different countries?
I'm sure it can be a little bit different in different countries, but I know nowadays that your resume, or CV as we call it in the UK, is an important part of the process.
That's true. You mentioned CV, and I think we call that a CV also in America, don't we?
Sometimes, yeah.
And Simon Stops is here today. Simon, you've done a lot in business and things like that. What do you think about this article on page 26?
I think it is pretty important. I, as part of my job, look at a fair number of resumes, and they really can sort of make or break your chances of getting a job.
Why do they call them CVs?
Well, a CV actually stands for the Latin curriculum vitae, and basically it is a complete profile on you, so it goes through a list of all of your different experiences. Usually I think of a resume as being a little shorter than a CV, but that might just be sort of a Canadian idea.
Oh, yeah, Canadians might have a different idea, but I think we all do use this word CV sometimes, and we might not know the Latin word, but we know it just stands for telling all about yourself, right?
That's right. That's the idea.
Okay, and who else is with us in our panelists today?
Hi, everyone. This is Albert. I'm excited. You know the adage that says, don't judge a book by its cover? Well, when it comes to resume, everyone judges you by its cover. So it's really important. I'm excited about going through this because, you know, you should stay up to date on how to have your resume modern.
But what does the word resume then actually mean then?
Well, you can see by looking at it that there's some weird punctuation that we don't normally see in English. Those are actually French punctuation marks. They're accents that tell you how to pronounce the word. So in English, if you were reading this word, you might say resume or resume-y. But because of those accents, it tells us it's a French word and you're supposed to say it a little differently. And that's why we're all saying resume.
Okay, that's good. So if you're looking for a new job, and a lot of people now are just graduating in June, and there are people who want to change their jobs, then there are 16 new rules to apply to your resume. That is rather scary, I think. What do you think?
I think so. It's interesting, too, because as we were preparing for this, we noticed that our big panel today of four people have some very different views on how important these 16 rules are.
Well, after I saw those rules, I thought, oh, goodness, this is, I better not change jobs.
Well, maybe we can think of them more as tips or suggestions that you might want to change. We might not be changing all 16 things on our resume, but maybe if we think five of them are very good or six of them, then we'll go and do that afterwards.
Oh, that's comforting, Gordon, to know that we don't have too many. But these will be tips, little suggestions. If you're looking for a job, to make your resume even more modern and more up-to-date. So let's look at this as a helpful lesson then, don't you think?
Yes.
Right. So let's read the very first paragraph because it's kind of an introduction to what we're going to be talking about for the next 2 days.
The modern resume. Looking for a new job? Here are 16 new rules to apply to your resume. Whether you're an experienced worker re-entering the job market or a recent college graduate, it may be time to freshen the look and content of your resume. That's because employers' expectations and preferences have changed in recent years, and college career counselors may not be up on the latest resume conventions.
So that tells us the reason that we're going through this, doesn't it?
It does. I think what happens is, like, with technology, it's conditioning us to approach and absorb information in a different way. So, you know, resumes, they need to be updated so people can maybe process it faster, absorb it faster. So we have different ways.
Yeah, and our first reading here really introduces you to a lot of different types of people who are probably in need of having resumes.
Mm.
So, for example, they say whether you're an experienced worker who is re-entering the job market, that's probably someone who has worked for a number of years but for some reason has stopped working. So you might think about women who've had children and left
mm-hmm,
the job market
right.
for a while, or maybe someone who's served in the military and spent a number of years with sort of a very stable job,
mm-hmm.
not needing to look for other jobs. And then you could also be a recent college graduate, and at this time of year, that's a really big issue. We have a lot of new workers entering the market.
I think this is a very good time to do this, because really a lot of people are just graduating, and they do want to get a good job, and they want to make a good resume. So they look up different ways, and this gives you some tips. I think it would be very useful, don't you, Gordon?
Yeah, certainly. I definitely agree here. And we learn here about that, yeah, you have career counselors or college career counselors at university who may be able to help, and it's always worth speaking to them. But this is a suggestions from a modern book and some modern experts who are going to say about the latest trends in how to make a resume very good for the modern day.
Well, that's true. The people in the university, they have these career counselors to help you know what you might want to be getting into, but some of them maybe have not kept up on what is required now, because, you know, it's quite new. Things change with technology, and we have to keep up. So in advance, we are keeping up, aren't we?
We are.
That's right. I do want to point out an interesting word. It's actually the last word of our reading there. It says, it talks about the latest resume conventions. And that can be a confusing word, because usually when we're talking about a convention.
A meeting.
Yeah, we mean like a meeting or like a trade show or something like that that we go to for work. But here we're really talking about rules.
Right.
And so this word,
the conventional way of doing things, right? The way we usually do things.
The normal way or the rules for doing
conventional,
it.
Right.
A very different kind of use.
Good point there. Well, there are 16 different ways, and we're going to talk about it for 2 days, but let's take a couple of them at a time. It says there are 16 ways to modernize or make it more modern than maybe your school professors even knew. So let's keep ahead here. Let's take the first two and see what they are.
Here are 16 ways to modernize your resume. 1. Shrink your header. Centering your name and contact information in a vertical stack wastes space and looks stodgy. Try keeping your contact info on a single line beneath your name, separated by even spacing. 2. Leave out your physical address. It's almost old school to include a street address, says Wendy Enno, co-author with Louise Kersmark of the upcoming Modernize Your Resume. Include only your telephone number, email address, and perhaps your city and state if you're limiting your job search geographically.
Well, the first part of it talks about the looks of the resume, isn't that right?
That's right. Shrink your header. When I was preparing my resume in college or in high school even, I never understood why headers used to be so big. I guess it was just to grab people's attention, like, hey, my name is Albert or my name is Gordon. But yeah, you should make it small, because like your resume, usually you should keep it to one page, and usually it's prime real estate.
That's right. And just to be clear, the header of a resume is it's basically the title. And so it's the words at the very top.
Would you put your name as title then?
Well, yeah, in the past we would write things like Simon's resume or, you know, something. And then you would leave a lot of different kind of contact information underneath. But the end result was that you would end up with a couple of inches at the top of your first page.
Okay.
That was basically contact information and title.
Right.
And what Albert just said was a resume should be sort of compact and small. So employers, if they have a stack of 100 resumes, you know, they don't want to read through all
of them. Pages and pages.
So they kind of look at the first page, and if you catch their attention, they might keep reading. But if you don't, you often kind of end up in the recycling bin.
Well, that's something to notice down here.
Yeah, so what we're talking about here is just making efficient use of the space you have on that first page. And I don't think you need to use the word resume or the initial CV at the top. You can just put your name, and then the suggestion here is that on one line you can have relevant contact information.
Mm. Now, in the past, did people sometimes put one thing on each line, like I did this and this, and then make different lines? But they said don't make a lot of lines, just make it in one line, right?
Mm-hmm. And I guess that kind of leads into the second part there in terms of what information you really should be giving employers. The second point was leave out your physical address.
Mm-hmm.
And a physical address, of course, just means your street address, the place you live. And actually, if you think about this, I think this point makes a lot of sense. Because why would an employer need an address? Really, they'd only need it if they were going
to
mail you something.
You up.
Right? And these days, they're not going to send you a letter to say, please come in for an interview. Right?
That's true. They're going to be emails, right?
Yeah, so providing the employer with a quick, easy, convenient way to get in contact with you is very important, but an address maybe not.
Yeah, the only time I can think an address is going to be useful is if you eventually get the job. And they're going to have to take some personal details from you. But that's going to happen much later
Once
down the line.
Once you're hired, then they might have to have more information about where you live.
Yeah, they're going to need it for their records. But,
sure.
But at this stage, when you're applying for a job, just maybe where you are, it suggests maybe the city and state you live in.
Yes.
We're all about to talk over
Are you
each other
old,
here.
Old school?
We're so excited to talk about what's going on.
I don't
want to
stumble on Simon.
What did you want to say?
Yeah, but basically the first two tips is to, you know, you want to make the information relevant and also easy to absorb. You make it easier for the HR or the person who's going to interview you. If they can absorb the information fast and easy, it'll be just make the whole process a lot better.
And you notice that word here, it says it's almost old school. You know, it's not school, but just it's Or we say old hat sometimes. It's old-fashioned.
Right.
It's almost old-fashioned, right, to say that, right?
Yeah, it's outdated. Isn't
outdated,
it?
That's right.
Yeah.
And this person, Wendy Enloe, is a co-author, wrote this book. And what was the name of the book?
Modernize Your Resume.
Okay, so that's what we're talking about. It's from this Modern Resume.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, though, because we've been talking about how you really don't need your street address, but when she gives a list of things you should include, she says telephone number, email address, and perhaps your city and state.
Right.
And I thought that was interesting because, well, you don't need necessarily your mailing address. A lot of employers are maybe looking to hire someone who already lives near their company.
Mm. Right.
And so, you know, they don't necessarily want to bring someone in from a different country or a different part of the country. And so it's interesting.
Since Gordon's from England, he better not apply.
Maybe it depends on where you're applying. If you're applying for a job in the city you live, then you can say you live there. But if you're applying for a job in a different city,
then you
maybe
you're
going to leave that out. So they don't know where you're based.
Yeah, that's
hard to say. Interesting, they want you to have the option to show where you live or where you're located, because that might be to your benefit.
Well, that's true, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I don't know, but the email, we did leave our email, but it says don't let your email age you. Let's read the next 2 points.
Three, don't let your email age you. Fair or not, an AOL address may signal that its owner is stuck in the 1990s. Four, include your LinkedIn profile URL. Also, include social media handles and your website or blog URLs if the content is relevant to your industry and highlights your expertise. If you haven't already done so, claim your custom LinkedIn URL.
Well, do you think it's really fair to say that because you have an old-fashioned email address that they might, make it against you? I don't know. That seems strange to me.
I kind of, like, balk at whenever I receive an email with an AOL address, I'm like, whoa, it's like 2001 or something. But I think a better tip is to use a proper professional email address.
Well, how do you know if yours is outdated or not?
Well, what Albert's getting at is there are a number of trends that happen with online emails, and some companies fall out of favor and some companies are very old. AOL is the example here, which I think is now quite an old company.
Right. Well, sometimes people even have their own kind of personal at their name, and there's all sorts of funny emails.
I think another issue here actually is that employers in a lot of Western countries are not allowed to ask specific questions about your personal information. So, for example, they're not supposed to ask if you're married or how
what's your
old
religious
you are,
preferences and all
that. Yeah, your religion, things like that. Yeah. And so I think the point here when we use this phrase, don't let your email age you, I think what they're saying is don't let your email address show how old you are. Mm-hmm. So if you have an AOL address,
can you ask how old they are?
Chances, maybe some places, but I don't think so in all places.
Really? Mm.
In the UK, you definitely cannot.
You cannot?
Yeah. If people work it out based on when your qualifications are. So
your degree.
Because you tend to get your degree at 22, you tend to get your high school education at 18, so they're going to work it out.
Yeah, the main reason for that is governments are trying to protect older employees who are maybe looking for
new
jobs. Well, because normally we have to pay older employees more money, right? Oh. And so if companies are looking for someone cheap to do the job.
I don't know. Anyway, you can't ask very many things, but it's nice to know. They used to ask everything a long time ago.
That's right. And I think Albert's point is also an important one. He was saying, basically, if you're using kind of an old email address, it might show that you're not very technology savvy or not very current with sort of trends.
And I really like what Doris mentioned was some people, they pay an extra few dollars a month for a custom email address. So it's probably like doris@herlastname.com or whatnot.
Don't tell them my last name. Okay.
They won't. I won't.
They'll have to buy their magazine to check it out.
Right, but I feel like it's it makes it more professional. Instead of having something that's like not your first and last name, some people use their aliases. It's just, save those for private emails.
But, sometimes when I've seen some of these strange different kinds of emails, then they are rejected. They say they don't recognize it. So you have to use a recognizable one that's a real carrier, too.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, like filters, right? To make sure you don't end up in someone's junk mail.
Ooh, yeah. What about this LinkedIn? LinkedIn is they try to get more and more people. In fact, I joined it because everybody was supposed to put your name on it. But then all of my friends got all kinds of messages from me, which I didn't send, that said, would you like to do something or other? So they get into your mail and tell everybody you want them. So I think sometimes it's scary to join some of these things. And then they write a whole bunch of things about people and you don't know if they're true. So do you think LinkedIn is that good to help people or not?
This is going to seem like a strange thing. I have a cousin who's an HR director, and she says it's actually extraordinarily important. So very, very important now. But it is important, I think, to remember that she actually works in that sort of technology industry. Mm-hmm. And so she says that's how they find most of their employees, through LinkedIn.
You can't believe everything you're seeing on LinkedIn. I know people that write everything they've ever done in their life on LinkedIn, and I don't know that they're good at it. So is that really a recommendation?
Well, I think that's what I'm saying. I think it kind of depends on your industry and what you do and at what level you kind of do it. So I think people have to kind of make their own choices about LinkedIn.
Well, I imagine LinkedIn is like an online resume in one way. It's got details about you. So just as we're talking about making your resume good and modern and it's going to impress people, your LinkedIn profile should be the same.
Right. And I think I would argue that LinkedIn is really important. It doesn't hurt to cast a wider net, to have your name out there in the ether and more available venues to be viewed. Some employers really prefer only viewing your profile or your resume through LinkedIn. One thing that's mentioned in here is their social media handles. Even if you don't provide
your handles,
your aliases or custom URLs.
Okay.
And I would say even if you don't provide such things like your Facebook accounts, I would argue that you should go and clean up your Facebook. I mean, all of us party from time to time, right? But don't make it public. But don't make those photos public,
people,
you know?
People say every little thing they never thought of.
Right. You know, clean it up a little bit, especially when you're in a job.
Well, that can be against you sometimes, what you put on Facebook.
Right.
When you're looking for a job. That's true.
Do yourself a favor. Take off those partying photos and you'll be okay.
Right. I think that's true. Well, anyway, it says if the content is relevant to your industry. Relevant means if it relates to it or it has something to do with it. Don't mention everything. Like if I'm applying for a job in a computer company, I want to say, well, I'm good at cooking and make cookies. It has nothing to do with that job. So only mention the things that are important to that job. Maybe you can do a lot of things, but don't put everything on it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Something that's relevant to the job and that highlights your expertise, why you're good at that, because you have done it, you know, for the government or something, right?
Exactly, yeah. And I think we're going to talk about this later on in the article, that your resume is going to change depending on which job you're applying for. And you may have a whole host of skills, as you've just described there, Doris, but for one particular job, you want to emphasize some, and for another, you're going to emphasize something different.
Because you're going to do different things.
And this is where I feel like LinkedIn would come in as well, because when you tailor your resume for one specific job and you just throw in your LinkedIn at the bottom of your resume or whatnot, it would have your complete history or experience.
I see. So LinkedIn just has a much more fuller record than maybe one A4 page of resume.
Right. It could be like supplementary.
That's interesting, too, because it gets back to the difference between resumes and CVs we were talking about at the beginning of the show.
Mm-hmm.
So in Canada, the way sort of I was taught to think about it was a resume was like a quick summary that you were using for a specific job. But I was always told that if you're asked for a CV, you should provide a complete work history.
Right.
So the CV then being like a fuller record
of what you've
done.
Then you could use LinkedIn and put everything on there.
Yeah, and so if you're using LinkedIn like a full work history, like a CV, you can see sort of the advantage of tagging that on to a quick summary resume that you've handed out.
There's some other good suggestions coming up. Let's take number 5 and number 6.
Five, ditch the objective statement. It's outdated and speaks to your own wants, not the employer's needs, says certified professional resume writer Lori Liebert. Replace it with a profile section, personal branding statement, or professional summary that makes clear the value you'll bring to that particular employer. You can use a sentence or two, bullet points, or both. 6. Use a descriptive headline. Professional summary adds nothing and takes up space, whereas a headline sums up your value proposition and differentiators. Example, bilingual EMT with urban search and rescue certification.
We're talking about ditching the objective statement. And the word they use here, ditch, could also be used as to eliminate or to get rid of. Later on, they will use it as eliminate. So ditching something means get rid of it, doesn't it?
That's right. An objective statement, that was a very difficult thing for me to pronounce there. An objective statement was a section at the top of your resume that basically explained what you were looking for. So it would say, I'm looking for a job in this industry and I want to work in this kind of work, et cetera, et cetera.
So we shouldn't say that?
Well, that's the interesting thing because, you know, you think you'd want employers to know, but they're not really saying get rid of that whole thing altogether. They're saying here it's outdated and it speaks to your own wants but not the employer's needs.
So instead you should say something like, well, I heard that you need a sound recording engineer, instead of saying, I am a good sound recording engineer.
They're actually saying here you can replace it with a profile section or a personal branding statement. So basically a summary of how you are the person they're looking for.
Right. So I feel like it just helps the reader reminds, like, oh, why do you stand out from the other 99 resumes or CVs?
That's right. So for example, if we here at Studio Classroom were looking for a radio host and I wanted to apply for the job, I wouldn't write, I'm a radio professional looking for important work in radio. Instead, I would write, I'm a radio host looking to work as a radio host, or just I'm an experienced radio host, and then it would catch your attention really quickly, and you
Well, you could say that I hear that you're looking for one or something. You say, what do they need? I mean, they have an opening for that, right?
Yeah, well, what you may be talking about there is what used to go on a covering letter we called, or the email that you're going to attach your resume to. But this is going to be, like, just underneath your name and your contact information.
Right.
So I don't think it's where you'd want to, like, specifically mention the company, because it's supposed to be about you, but it's just not supposed to be very egoistic. You're not supposed to be like, I'm amazing and like, I want to do this. It's, you've got to, like, use the words that they're going to, that they're going to, like, pick up on and know that is related to their job.
Well, it says you make it kind of like a professional summary more than what you want, that kind of thing. But it says to use a descriptive headline, and what does that mean?
Well, that's, again, we're kind of like playing with the meanings of different words here. They actually go on to define the professional summary. So first in point five, they said get rid of the objective statement and use a personal summary instead. Now in point six, they're saying don't call it a personal summary. Don't put the title personal summary on it. Instead, just make a line that quickly gives a summary of what you are and what you can do.
Right. Just jump right into like, oh, this is who I am. This is the value that I bring in. And then an example they use is a bilingual EMT with urban search and rescue certification. And just a reminder for our audience that EMT is a emergency medical technician. They're usually the people that ride in ambulances on the way to the hospital. You know, they help and assist any medical
urban search and rescue certification.
Yeah. Huh? So this is really, this line is like a one line resume.
Job description.
Tagline. Yeah.
You know, they're saying I speak more than one language.
Hmm.
When they say they're an EMT, an emergency medical technician,
yeah,
it means they've passed their licensing or whatever, and so they're qualified.
So
to
just
do
say
this
it
job.
In one sentence, right?
That's right. It gives you a quick summary.
Well, I guess we don't have time to say too much more about it today. There's an interesting subject, and we're going to talk about it tomorrow, so I would like you to all come back.
Oh.
Panelists, will you all be here?
Yes.
And your people listening in, you better be here, too, because you never know when you might need it. And there's some very good words to learn in here, too, and we'll go over those more tomorrow. So be sure and be here with us as we continue this lesson tomorrow. Have a good day today. Goodbye for now.
Bye-bye.